Good morning. Welcome to WTOP's Ask the Governor. I'm Richard Day, along with WTOP's Mark Seagraves. Our guest in the studio for this full hour is Maryland's Governor Martin O'Malley. We'll take your calls. The number is 877-336-1035. If you want to email questions, go to WTOP.com. You can also post questions on our Facebook page or through Twitter using the hashtag AskTheGovernor. Here's Mark Seagraves.
Governor, good morning. Thanks for coming in.
My honor, Mark. Good to see you. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you, too. Let's get with it. You have released your budget. There's a lot of talk. I know we're going to spend a lot of time this morning talking about budget proposals and whatnot. Let's start with, I think, one of the things that a lot of people, particularly in their cars, are concerned about, and that is the idea of raising the gas tax in Maryland. What are your plans, and what can Maryland residents expect as far as a gas tax?
Well, we haven't had any increase in our primary source of transportation funding, which is the gas tax, since the early 1990s. At that time, gas was about $1.08 a gallon. Today, it is $3.50, $3.60 a gallon, and yet the flat 23 cents that it was, that at which it was set in early 90s, is the same flat 23 cents that it is today. The best option, it would seem to me, and none of these options are popular options, the best option, it would seem to me, would be to get away from the flat per gallon tax and instead move to a percentage. The best way, I would think, to do that, after consultation and discussions with legislative leaders, would be to roll back the exemption from the sales tax which we currently have in Maryland. In other words, while there is a flat 23 cent per gallon tax, there is no sales tax on gasoline. The sales tax in Maryland is currently 6%, ranking us, I think, 32nd in the country. And it would seem to me that the best option available to us would be to roll back that exemption. In other words, phase in a 2% sales tax every year for the next 3 years with some sort of braking mechanism in there in the event that the price of gasoline were to spike in any given year.
So get rid of the 23-cent flat tax and replace it, or just supplement
maintain
it?
The 23-cent flat tax. I mean, look, right now, the Greater Washington Board of Trade, the Greater Baltimore Committee, business groups, the Chamber of Commerce, all recognize that we are not investing what we should be investing in our transportation infrastructure, our roads and our mass transit. That's why we have one of the most congested metropolitan areas in the entire country. We won't turn around that circumstance simply by sitting back and hoping that it changes on its own. The only way we'll change that circumstance is to choose to do it. And that gas tax is our primary means of funding. We had had discussions about getting away from the per gallon tax altogether, the possibility of raising the sales tax by a penny. There seems to be no consensus and no will to do that. There seems to be a better path forward and a more likely room for success in phasing out the sales tax exemption and thereby having, in essence, a hybrid system. We'd have the flat 23 cents, but then you'd have 6% of whatever the price is. Had we indexed the gas tax back in the 1990s, we'd probably have another $4 billion in dollars that we're investing in traffic congestion alleviation and mass transit.
Let me ask you, you've got to have about 30 seconds for this answer, but where would that money go? If you had the sales tax added to gasoline purchases, where would that money go?
It would go to transportation solutions.
Just like the flat gas tax.
Correct.
And would you, we've got a couple of emails on this, would you be willing to have legislation saying that money meant for the transportation fund could only be used for transportation projects and could not be diverted to other uses?
Yes.
Governor Martin O'Malley is here to take your questions via Facebook, Twitter, emails, phone calls for the next hour. We're going to take a look at traffic and weather on the 8s.
We continue with Ask the Governor. Our guest this hour, Maryland Governor Martin O'Malley. Here's WTOP's Mark Seagraves.
Governor, staying in the idea of the gas tax increase, a lot of people want to know exactly where that money would go. You say to transportation. Are you going to give us a transportation plan on Wednesday night when you do your State of the State address?
We'll probably be introducing the bill shortly thereafter. I'll certainly talk about it. And in fact, the just spoke about it with you more than I have to date about what we'll be proposing. I mean, again, in essence, what we'll be proposing is a rollback, repealing, doing away with the sales tax exemption, phasing it in 2% a year over the next 3 years with a braking mechanism for inflation so that in any given year, if price of a gallon of gasoline were to suddenly spike, we wouldn't layer in the 2% that year. And then there'll be a bill that accomplishes that. But we were talking during the break. All of this requires that the legislature decide that this is a good way to go, that what all of us are paying right now in terms of idling and traffic, congestion, time away from family, time away from work, that all of that is more expensive in the longer term than making this investment so that we can have better transportation solutions and start working on these things. Let me underscore one other thing, Mark, and that is the value in terms of our economy that comes from our making these investments that only we can make in that common platform, that common infrastructure of ours over which people's lives travel, over which our economy, our commerce, our workers, our goods travel. There is no one that is going to do this for us. Bridges are not like trees that grow taller and stronger with age. And however much we want to encourage foreign direct investment, China and India aren't going to build our infrastructure for us. These are things that our parents and our grandparents did. And for all of the talk about the 1%, this country that throughout most of her history has been so such a remarkable and positive force for expanding and growing our middle class was also built by the middle class.
So is the only mechanism to pay for it this sales tax on gasoline, or will there be other funding mechanisms that you'll announce?
No, I mean, there's a number of things that go into the Transportation Trust Fund. None of them is as impactful as the gas tax none of them is as impactful as the gas tax. And rather than have this fee, that fee, the other fee, and, you know, death by a thousand fees, I'd rather just be straight up with people and say, none of us likes this, but the cost to us of doing nothing is greater. And to do nothing, inaction, I believe is irresponsible. So it still remains to be seen whether the business community in Washington and Baltimore that care so adamantly about this in boardrooms will care just as adamantly in the halls of Annapolis so that our legislators will see this is a better way to go. We could create, I mean, without any enhancement, we can create, there will be 19,000 jobs supported by the capital investments we already make this year in transportation. With this sort of enhancement, there'll probably be another 7,000 to 8,000 jobs that will be supported. Building, by the way, very needed things in a metropolitan state like ours where we waste so much time and money sitting in traffic.
Well, let's talk about that. What will be some of your priorities in your transportation plan? What will be some of the projects that you want to be shovel ready and that will impact the congestion and the traffic problems that you talked about?
Oh, there are many. I mean, you've read the stories about that bridge on the Eastern Shore, the Dover Bridge, which we've been talking about building for 40 years. There is the red line and the purple line that are on the runway as we come up with a more balanced approach to between roads and transit. There are highways like the 301 on the Eastern Shore and other places all across the state. The connectors in Western Maryland that will aid and economic development in that hard-hit area of our state. So there are many. We have a six-year capital plan, and when it comes to transportation, it's one of the areas where we have actually broken out of that sort of annual budgeting exercise. So there is a six-year capital plan, and it's balanced, but there is none of these things build themselves. There is no innovation that builds a $100 million bridge for $10 million.
And speaking of bridges, WTOP has a story today about there's still conversation about another bridge across the Potomac connecting Maryland and Virginia. Is that a reality to be talking about something like that?
Well, I think it's certainly a reality to talk about. In fact, Governor McDonnell and I spoke about it briefly as we were wrapping up our latest sit down with Mayor Gray. Our state has a lot of priorities. A second crossing is not on our short-term horizon, but the possibility of a second crossing north of Point of Rocks is something that we're glad to talk about and willing to explore. And, you know, there's always difficulties in building any road. I mean, we opened the ICC. By the way, did anybody notice?
Well, that's on my list. You tell us. Did any of the commuters notice? How's the ICC working?
I don't know. Let's ask people. Let's ask people to call in. Honk if you like the ICC. It was a big project for anyone who so cynical and doubts our ability to build big projects and do them well. You should take a ride on the ICC. It will cost you something because part of the financing for that was tolls. But it is if you don't mind my saying so, it is a beautiful looking highway, and there was more environmental remediation done on that and more environmental design and care taken with that road than any that we've ever done. And we're still capable of doing important and big things.
But are as many people using it as you had hoped or anticipated?
I don't know. Raquel, could you check with the state satellite and see what our ridership is on the ICC?
And if it's not, do you think that's a question of the cost, that maybe the cost needs to be rolled back? Is that something that
maybe
you'd be open to?
Could be. I can't, because that's how we paid for it, Mark.
But you think that might be a factor in ridership?
I don't know. Why don't we
get the numbers
before we assume that ridership is down and this is another miserable project that we're not capable of accomplishing as a people? Let's see what the reality is, and then we'll have a reality based conversation.
All right. Well, let's take a look at the reality on the roads right now with a look at traffic and weather on the 8th.
This is WTOP's Ask the Governor program with Maryland Governor Martin O'Malley. We'll take your calls at 877-336-1035, and you can also email questions at WTOP.com. Here's Mark Seagraves.
Governor, we got a lot of people calling in, and I know we want to go through a lot of these budget numbers, but it's not all bad news in Maryland and budget and raising taxes and whatnot. And you were just going through a laundry list of improvements that Maryland has seen. Why don't you run through that list for our listeners?
Well, look, every year around this time, we get worked up, and there's a lot of angst about how we're going to close budget gaps. We've made more cuts to our state government than any governor in Maryland history. But all of this is not about the exercise itself. It's about the results for the people of our state. It's about growing our middle class. It's about creating jobs and expanding opportunities. So no state has made greater strides than we have in holding college tuition down and making college more affordable for more people. Never before, but in the middle of this recession, we've been named the number one public schools in America, not once, but for 4 years in a row. And there is no better tool for growing our middle class than better education for all of our children. Violent crime, thanks to law enforcement officers and their courage throughout our state, has been driven down to a 30-year low. And the most recent month, our unemployment went down to 6.7%, the lowest it's been since the recession hit. Foreclosures are way, way down, thanks to President Obama's leadership on that. And our state had a very positive year of job creation last year. In fact, our most positive year since the recession hit. So the goal here is not the budgets are important. Making the right cuts is important. Protecting the right priorities is important. Paying for these things is important, but it's all for the goal of strengthening and growing the ranks of our middle class, expanding opportunity so the families that are not yet in our middle class can move up the rungs of the ladder to economic independence and better success for their kids.
Well, let me pick on one of those points that you mentioned about lifting the middle class, and that is, and you mentioned foreclosure rates, but one of your proposals about raising income taxes and reducing some of the exemptions for mortgages on homeowners, you have a lot of taxpayers, a lot of residents who are upset about that and say that this is not the time to do those types of tax increases. The comptroller, Peter Franco, says that would be an unfair burden on homeowners in Maryland. And you have realtors and mortgage bankers who are worried that it hurts at a time when people are trying to buy houses, that this will make people less likely to buy houses or even to refinance. What do you say to those concerns?
The people should read the proposals first. I know that, you know, there are some like the comptroller who are running for the next office and have their eyes focused on the next election. My focus is on the next generation. I cannot run for reelection. This is nothing that I'm proposing in order to boost my numbers for the next campaign or to boost my popularity. And what's contained in the proposal is, I mean, quite frankly, Mark, in the State of the State address, I'm going to be asking all of us to do a little more. Those of us like my wife and I, who happen to be among the 20% of Marylanders who are in the top earning 20%, who earn more than 80% of our neighbors, are going to be asked to do a little more. But we should take a deep breath and actually read what we're talking about. What we're saying is that when it comes to income tax deductions on your state portion of your income taxes, we're asking for a cap for the 20% of us that earn more than 80% of us, and a cap that says we only claim 90% of our deductions.
What's the dollar amount on that? Would that be people making $100,000, people making $250,000?
Roughly, it means that a family, say, of that makes $150,000 a year would get $191 less back in their refund check if we cap deductions at 90%. That's not doing away with all home deductions. If you move up to the next bracket, which I think the next cutoff is 175 for joint filers, it's capped at 80%. So these are, and when it comes to actually doing away with the personal exemption for phasing that out, again, it's in a sort of two-step process that only affects that top 20%. Now, some other things in the budget, like the flush tax, that will affect all of us. If we drive and the legislature, which is not part of the budget yet, it'll be a separate proposal. If the legislature decides that we should, after 20 years, increase or index and that gas tax by repealing the sales tax exemption on it, then yes, that will affect all of us. And we've made many, many cuts, and after each year and $7.5 billion in cuts, there are fewer options for making responsible cuts. We could still do it with cuts, Mark, but I think that would be less responsible than asking those of us who make a little more to pay a little more in order to protect education and our quality of life.
Let's get some of our listeners. Les is in Montgomery County and wants to talk about this very issue. Les, you're on with the governor.
Yes, Governor, thank you. Governor, I'm following up on this point of what's the definition of wealthy. In your plan, it kicks in at $100,000. President Obama's proposed tax increase defined it initially as adjusted gross income of $250,000 and above, and then I think that was scrapped and changed to millionaires. Now, I live in Montgomery County, $100,000, $150,000. A police officer that has some overtime and is married to a teacher would make that much. Would you be willing to consider changing this threshold and raising it so it's kind of more in line with who's really rich, really just taxing the millionaires?
Yeah. Well, let me say two things, Les. What, Mark?
We're going to go. I'm sorry.
I can wait till after the break.
Yeah, we're going to go for traffic and weather. And then we'll get an answer to Les's question after traffic and weather on the 8s.
Guest this hour in the studio, Maryland Governor Martin O'Malley. We're taking your calls at 877-336-1035, and you can email questions at WTOP.com. Also post questions on our Facebook page or through Twitter. Use the hashtag AskTheGov. Here's Mark Seagraves.
Governor, I cut you off before you could answer Les's question about really defining at what point the income tax increase would hit people at $100,000, $150,000, $250,000. What is your answer to Les?
Right. Les had there were kind of two points I wanted to make in answering Les's question. This is not so much about defining or labeling who is and who is not wealthy. It's about protecting the priorities like public education, like affordable college, and like public safety and public health that allow us to grow our middle class. Les, 84% of what your state tax dollar goes towards is either public education, public health, or public safety. That's 84 cents of every dollar. So when the president was in his State of the Union, which I thought was a great talk and a great vision of where a country needs to go, was making those cutoffs at $200,000, I think that's entirely appropriate at the federal level, especially for the things that the president was talking about, which was increased rates. In our proposal, we're not talking about increased rates. We're talking about modest caps of deductions for the 20% of us that earn more than 80% of us in Maryland. So it's a slightly different conversation. But in all of this In all of this talk, there's been a lot of focus on what ails our national government's coffers. And I think the point that all of us are realizing is that 55% of our deficit was driven by tax cuts that disproportionately benefited the very wealthiest among us. That is a separate conversation, though all of these things are related, from the one we're having in our state government where we're talking
about. But to Les's point, are you open to raising that? I mean,
sure,
at what point?
I'm open to all things. Every year I put in a budget. And at the end of it, it's been tweaked and it's been changed by the legislature. Any governor that tells you that he's not open to compromise and working with the legislature should go find a different job.
So at $150,000, this is the figure you just floated out before. Is that when these caps on deductions kick in, or how does that work? What is the rate progression on that?
Well, it's the deductions start to phase. It's an 80% cap on deductions. In other words. We phase into an 80% cap at first. I think joint filers, it's a 90%. Then it goes to an 80% cap at the higher. And the exemptions similarly get phased out. They're halved. And then, but all of those two tiers happen within the 20% of us that are in the top earning portion of our state. The revenues that are generated by this are revenues that we need in order to support public education, that we did not become the best public
schools. What's the dollar amount of the household income where these start impacting?
Again, the best example that I can share with you is that a family of making $150,000 a year would pay an additional $191, or stated differently, would see $191 less come back in their refund check.
Let's get another caller in here. Carolyn is calling from Silver Spring. You're on with the governor. Carolyn, go ahead.
Good morning. Sir, I spoke to you almost 2 years ago, explaining to you in several letters that I have not received child support in almost 2 years. When I speak to Baltimore up in Baltimore about my child support, my caseworker says his hands are tied. So what are you doing for health and welfare in order to get these people, these men and women who do not take care of their children?
And Carolyn, why do they tell you that their hands are tied?
Because they can't find him.
Right.
He has a driver's license somewhere in these 50 states. Why can't the states communicate in order to find these people?
Carolyn, there is no detective bureau that is large enough for us to be able to provide the sort of service that...
It's called motor vehicle.
Yes, ma'am.
Everybody has a driver's license somewhere.
Yes, ma'am. Carolyn, I'd be glad to personally follow up again. I'm sorry that we have not gotten better results for you in collecting on the parent who does not want to be found. But I'm certainly glad and appreciate the pain that you're going through in not being able to get the support that your child is owed. And if you would leave us your phone number, let me try once again to get you better service.
Let's get another caller in here. Another Carolyn. This one is Caroline, is calling from Gaithersburg. You're on with the governor.
Yes. You started to talk about the ICC earlier, and the comment and question I had is, I do use it 3 or 4 times a week. It appears like there's not much ridership on it, and I'm wondering if you increase the speed limit, if that would increase the ridership, as well as possibly lowering the fares.
Yeah, Carolyn, we checked during the break, and the traffic counts are actually on target. In other words, for the projected ridership, there actually is the traffic on it that we had anticipated being on that road for this time.
What about the idea of raising the speed limit on the ICC?
I haven't seriously considered that question. Certainly Bob Margerberg is here. Are we allowed to do that, Bob? Is there a...
we'll get our traffic expert on,
I don't know.
On that.
I've lost track of where the federal law is on that, Carolyn. But...
Let me shift gears and ask you about another issue in the budget, and that is the shift of the pension payments from the state to having it shared by the counties as well as the state. We have had county executives over the years from Montgomery County, Prince George's County, in here saying that that is absolutely a budget breaker for the counties if they have to share this responsibility. What do you say to Mr. Leggett and Mr. Baker that about your proposal?
Sure. I actually met with Mr. Leggett now and also County Executive Ullman and County Executive Baker, and we talked about this. I mean, for every year for the last 6 years and actually before that, whenever the budget has come up, there are those who say that Maryland should not be one of the few states that pays for 100% of teacher retirement costs. There have been many proposals in the past that would have shifted this cost to the counties, or a large portion of this cost to the counties, without any revenues to support that shift. All of the complicated things that we were just talking about with the deductions and the caps and the phased-out exemptions, all of that is for the purpose of providing the revenues necessary in order to protect that priority of education. And because our state has a local income tax, the counties would benefit from those additional revenues. In other words, there is a portion of those revenues that would go to the counties that are in greatest need of funding any sort of shift like the one we're proposing, which would be a 50-50 sharing, giving the counties credit for what they already pay in Social Security.
Maryland Governor Martin O'Malley taking your calls and emails on Ask the Governor. Now look at traffic and weather on the 8th.
TOP's Ask the Governor. Our guest this hour, Maryland Governor Martin O'Malley. Here's Mark Seagraves.
Governor, in the break, you were getting updated on the ICC. What can you tell us about
right,
that?
Right. Caroline had called about the ICC. And Caroline, actually, that we are considering potentially raising the speed limit on the ICC. It's my understanding it's 55, and yet on 95, the speed limit is 65 miles per hour. So the folks that run the ICC, the Maryland Department of the Maryland Transportation Authority, are actually considering potentially raising the speed limit.
And you were telling us also, we got some calls about this, the speed limit is being enforced on the ICC, but not by Maryland State Police. You were telling me that the Transportation Authority has officers as well?
Yes. In our state, we have a Maryland Transportation Authority, and it is to this authority that the tolls for the Bay Bridge, the tunnels, and other things go. And they do have a separate police force. The ICC was built by the Maryland Transportation Authority as the entity that floated those bonds because of the ongoing revenues. We've had some discussions about how we might consider better merging the state police and the Maryland Transportation Authority police, and perhaps we'll have more discussions like that in the upcoming session. If we can realize some savings, we'd like to do that. They're separate. It's a separate authority. It's a little tricky, but other places like New York have figured out how to make effective mergers, and perhaps that's an issue that the legislature will consider this session.
Another budget proposal that we got a lot of emails about is the digital projects tax, or the Amazon.com, iTunes tax, whatever you want to call it. But this is something that came up a few years ago in Maryland.
No, entirely different thing came up a few years ago.
The high-tech tax.
Right. This is nothing like that.
Tell us.
But detractors would like you to believe it's a repeat.
Tell us why Maryland residents shouldn't be upset about a tax on their iTunes purchases, their Amazon.com. There are a lot of vendors in Maryland who are people who sell through Amazon.com. They would be impacted.
Right. There are a lot of retailers who are affected when online purchases do not pay the applicable state sales tax. In other words, when the online purchases happen and there's no state sales tax, that's a windfall for the Amazons of the world. And it's also a disadvantage for your local retailers, your Main Street merchants and shop owners. And so what we would like to do is collect the tax the sales tax that's actually owed. Amazon's been involved in this controversy around the country. As far as the tunes or the apps and those things, that's a relatively small part of this package. But this is nothing like the so-called, like the tech tax, which we repealed after, I think it was the shortest lived and most ill-conceived revenue measure ever passed by the Maryland General Assembly, which was done as part of the special session that some call it. I call it the especially horrible session. And so this is nothing like that. And as far as the tunes and those sorts of things, that's a much smaller piece of this than recovering the sales tax that's owed on internet sales so as not to disadvantage merchants.
Let's talk about gay marriage. It failed last year. You seem to be putting a lot more effort, personal effort, behind it this time. What needs to happen in order for gay marriage to pass in Maryland this year?
Right. We thought it was going to pass last year. And what we need to do is to be able to persuade a half dozen members of the House of Delegates that we can protect religious freedom while at the same time protecting rights equally of all individuals, especially within the context and where this issue is concerned of civil marriage. There are a number of states that have found a way to protect religious liberty, to protect the freedom of churches, to define sacraments however their faith wishes. And they found a way also to protect the equality of civil rights that people have. The District of Columbia is one of those. We already recognize marriages that are performed in the District of Columbia. What I hope people will do, Mark, is look at this through the eyes of children of households that are headed by gay parents. I don't think any of us want a group of children in our state to have lesser protections than children of other households. And for that reason, I hope that people will find it in their hearts to be able to vote for a bill that protects religious liberties. We've drawn from what other states have done. We've made much more explicit the protections for religious freedom. But at the same time, we have to protect rights equally under the law. This is part of our legislative package. I believe the hearing is in the Senate is on Tuesday, and I'm hopeful that we'll be able to get it passed. And I think we will.
I know you've talked about it. Your wife has apologized, but your wife's comments the other day, using the word cowards to describe some of the people who voted against it or perhaps changed their votes last year, does that help or hurt this effort?
Right. She was not talking about people that had a difference of opinion on this. And I think she was probably thinking of those that co-sponsored but then weren't there when the bill was coming up for a vote. And she has profusely apologized. Look, I love Katie with all my heart. And in 20 years, she has maintained a decorum and a dignity and a balance about her duties and her professional duties and also her role as my wife when I was mayor of Baltimore and also governor. And she has apologized to delegates. She's apologized for her language, and she feels very badly about it. If I believe that justice, and to paraphrase Ralph Waldo Emerson, produces justice, and we all have to be very careful. Some of us feel very passionately about this issue, and we feel the hurt that many gay couples feel that they are not treated equally under the law. But none of us can respond with the language of hurt. We need to respond with words of compassion, with words of understanding, if we hope to arrive at a point where all Marylanders are treated equally under the law. And I think that's probably all I need to say on that.
Maryland Governor Martin O'Malley taking your calls and emails on Ask the Governor. Now I look at traffic and
GOP's Ask the Governor with Maryland Governor Martin O'Malley and Mark Seagraves.
Governor, it's a lightning round, our last 10 minutes.
Can I give a shout-out for Carolyn?
Absolutely.
Before we forget? There were two Carolyns who called the program. The first Carolyn had some child support issues, and Carolyn, you hung up before we could get your phone number. If you could call back to the station here, the same number you called, and leave your phone number for me, I'd appreciate it.
And we'll make sure the governor gets that. Governor, let me ask you, there was a story in the news that came up about a family that was hit by a drunk driver on I-270 back in 2008. A 10-year-old girl was killed. The driver is serving 8 years in jail, but the family wants to sue the bar that served this driver, reportedly 17 beers and several shots of vodka. But Maryland is one of the few states, Virginia also, that does not allow victims of drunk drivers to sue the establishment that served the drunk driver. These are known as dram shop laws. This has come up in the General Assembly, but never made it out of committee last year. It looks like it'll come up again. Do you think victims of drunk drivers in Maryland should be able to sue the establishments that overserve?
Absolutely. And I was not I did not follow this bill last year. I appreciate and I will follow it this year and check into it after this program. But absolutely, I mean, people that have been harmed by the irresponsible actions of others should absolutely be able to recover as best anyone can recover from a loss of a family member to a drunk driver.
You mentioned President Obama's State of the Union address. One of the things he mentioned in that was putting pressure on states to keep college tuitions low, and even threatening to withhold federal money if colleges increase their tuitions. It looks like there may be a bill now introduced in Maryland that would put a permanent cap on state college tuitions. What do you think about keeping the cap in place in Maryland tuition?
Well, we're one of the great success cases over these last 4 years, when we have moved Maryland from being one of the six most expensive college systems in the country. Now we're down in the neighborhood of about 23rd. It didn't happen by itself. It happened because we chose not only to make economies and efficiencies on the college campuses, but we also invested more in our state budget in order to buy down what would otherwise have been a tuition increase. We invested another $20 to $30 million a year. For 4 years in a row, we went without a penny's increase in college tuition. And over the last couple of years, we have held the line to 3%, which is probably the smallest college tuition increase among the 50 states. Now, there may be some, perhaps in North Dakota or another sparsely populated mineral-rich state that's been able to avoid any increase. But I think the president's call is absolutely on target. We need to make college more affordable for more people in order to grow our middle class.
A permanent cap in Maryland?
Permanent cap in Maryland. Here's the problem with the permanent caps. It feeds this myth that somehow there's a magic wand in the governor's desk or some sort of easy button. Look, you get what you pay for. If we want college to be more affordable for more people, then it must be one of those things that all of us is willing to support together, because we know it'll create a state with more opportunity, higher earning citizens, a more qualified workforce for our employers. And so you get what you pay for. Putting a cap on without any way to support college education doesn't seem to be a healthy exercise. However, I do think it's important that we make college affordability a much higher economic priority.
You met with Mayor
and the president. Let me also give the president kudos, because he actually pushed through a number of things President Obama did in order to make it possible for more people to be able to borrow dollars and to borrow them at lower rates and to be able to go to college through the Pell Grants.
You met with Mayor Gray of the district in Virginia, Governor McDonnell, about Metro funding and Metro safety recently. What's the state of Metro and your level of confidence in their performance?
I think the state of Metro's operations where safety is concerned is improving. I believe that Mr. Sorrells is doing a very capable job of moving Metro forward, and also encourage riders to go online and look at the public dashboard that for the first time citizens and riders have the ability to view, that shows you which escalators are up, which ones are down, what the on-time performance is. The key here, and the most important issue to all of us, is safety, though, and their ability to knock out that backlog of safety investigations, their ability to put in place the training to change the culture from one that was lax to one that puts safety first. All of those things are critically important. Have already saved lives, and we need to continue doing that.
You are head of the Maryland Governors Association. The Democrats. Your counterpart, the head of the Republicans, Governor McDonnell of Virginia, will be here in this chair tomorrow morning for Ask the Governor, 10 a.m. Be sure to tune in. What would you say to Governor McDonnell about the way the Republican primary is shaping up and the race now between the four candidates that are left?
No, I don't know. This may sound strange to you, but when Governor McDonnell and I get together, we don't talk about national politics. We talk about public safety, and we talk about transportation, and we talk about Metro. So what would I say to him? I would say that I hope his party has a long and robust discussion about the future of their party, because we need the Republican Party back. A bird can only fly with two wings, and we need both the right wing and the left wing to be functioning in order to make our republic soar. And for the last few years, the right wing's been in tatters and has been broken, has become a party that's not in keeping with the prouder traditions of Lincoln and Eisenhower and other Republicans who were fiscally conservative but also realize that a modern economy requires modern investments, and if we want a better country, we have to be willing to invest in it and work for it.
Does it matter to Democrats who is on the top of the Republican ticket?
I don't know. I've been kind of watching their debate. I think there's probably arguments to be made either way. The recession and the debt that President George Bush left to President Obama were both so large that people are understandably feeling that they want this recovery to happen yesterday. And so whoever it is, the president, I believe, has a strong record of showing that he's turned around the auto industry. GM is hiring. That wouldn't have happened by itself. We actually have unemployment going down. Foreclosures have been driven down. We are on a steady recovery, and it could be a lot faster if the Republican Party would strengthen that wing and start flying with us.
Maryland Governor Martin O'Malley, we appreciate you being here. State of the State on Wednesday. Now look at traffic and weather on the 8th.